Hey guys, I'm Valerie.
And I'm Jasmine, and this is Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
Welcome to the first episode of Season 9, and I know we originally said that this is going to be a season that is about cases that we think should be classified as homicides. I do, now that we've gotten a little bit into it, I do want to state that our minds might change, and, you know, that's what it looked like on the surface, and it's just going to be an interesting season. And we're going to, you know, everybody's going to have a different opinion about it. And it's going to be really interesting to see what everybody thinks. So just be prepared to have discussions. We are so excited about it. So let's do the damn thing, huh?
Let's freaking do it.
Okay. Today we are talking about Annie Boryasin. The sources for this are Medium, AYR Advertiser, Sky News, Daily Record, AnnieRockstar.com, which is a website that is held by Annie's mother, run, that's the word, ScottishReview.net, The Scottish Mail, Sky News Storycast had a 6-part podcast series called What Happened to Annie that I did listen to, The National, PubMed, Slate, Evidence Magazine, Science Daily, and the Journal of Clinical Pathology. So from the end of that, you can see that you are going to be getting a science lesson today. You're welcome. It's been a minute, and I am excited to give it to you. So let's jump in. I do want to give you a quick trigger warning for the episode that there is going to be discussion of suicide. So that being said, please be aware of that coming into the episode. So I want to tell you first a little bit about Annie. Annie Christina Boryasin was born on February 7th, 1975. She was half Hungarian on her dad's side and half Swedish on her mom's side, but she was raised in Sweden. She was the second child of 4 kids. She had long blonde hair that she loved and blue eyes, and she was incredibly intelligent and talented. In addition to being athletic and musically inclined, she fluently spoke 6 languages. 6.
Dang, like, I always thought I was pretty good by speaking, like, 2 languages, but fuck that, 6? That's amazing.
I'm trying to learn Spanish right now, and let me just tell you that even trying to say phrases in Spanish, my brain is trying to comprehend the difference between English, what German I remember, and then Spanish, and I can barely do that. And so, and that's with basic, like, elementary phrases in Spanish, so I just don't understand at all how somebody can fluently speak 6 languages. That's amazing.
Right, because, like, I'm thinking about, like, my thought process. So whenever, like, I hear, like, Spanish in my brain, this is the way I imagine it. It goes in, and then I, like, break every single word down back in English. And then, like, that's how I understand it.
Right.
It's weird. It's so weird. So, like, 6 languages, I feel like if you were talking to me in one of the many languages that I know, that I would end up having, like, a clusterfuck of everything, and then I'd respond to you in, like, a word in all 6 languages.
Right.
Like, it would just be crazy.
I felt that way when I started learning German. I'm like, okay, everybody says that, like, knowing multiple languages makes you more intelligent. I felt like I got dumber, because, like, I couldn't speak, like, in a way that made perfect sense. Like, all of a sudden, I'm, like, using basic words instead of saying, like, oh, I used to be like, oh, I'm doing well, how are you, and da da da, and I'm like, oh, hey, I'm good. Because, like, my brain can't, like, go back and forth that quickly. And, like, trying to say something in German, like, the entire time, I'm like, okay, speak German, speak German, speak German. Now I'm like, okay, speak Spanish. Like, no, that's not the right word. You know what I mean? And so right. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I feel dumber when I speak another language. I know. But anyway, so I just want to just very much point out that she was super smart. So she played bass, and she sang in a band with her siblings called Annie and the Wolves that performed in venues around Europe. She studied music and hospitality in school. In 2004, Annie moved to Edinburgh, Scotland, and she loved Scotland. She thought Edinburgh was the best place on earth. It was charming and historic. So that being said, she had a hard time maintaining residency in Scotland. And I can attest to this, because living abroad is not as simple as just showing up and finding a job. Like, that's the easy part. The hard part is the paperwork and the approval. Like, you can be a perfect citizen and afford to live there and still have a hard time getting residency. So that was kind of the case for Annie. She had been in Scotland for the last year on a scholarship at the Whiskey Heritage Center. And I looked this up, and it's a popular distillery. So she was working there to study English and working on her hospitality, which is super cool. Well, That ended in August of 2005, so she returned to Sweden on August 17th. But she would only stay a few months, and she returned to Scotland in October of 2005, hoping to find a job in the hotel industry. She loved to travel and loved meeting new people, so it seemed like a really good fit for her. Well, Annie very much enjoyed rugby, and she began spending a lot of time at the local rugby club. She also frequented a pool and was an avid swimmer, because remember I said she was a very athletic person also. She kind of ticked all those boxes where you're like, oh, I wish I was smart. Oh, I wish I could play an instrument. Oh, I wish I was athletic. She was all of those things. And she was beautiful. So, like, you have, she just was, like, the perfect. Really, she hit all the boxes. It's amazing that she was so good at everything. Most characteristic of her, though, according to her friends and family, was her file of facts, which is one of those, it's like a journal-sized organizer, and it, like, looks kind of like a wallet on the inside, and it has, like, a three-ring binder in it. Do you know what I'm talking about? I can post a picture of this on the Instagram for anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like a little bit of, like, a chunky journal, and it usually has, like, a zipper around it. Not always. Sometimes it has a clasp, and in it, you can, like, keep track of everything. Like, so for her, she used it as, like, a travel journal, a place to record memories. It was an appointment calendar. It was where she stored her phone numbers and email addresses. So it had, like, her entire life in it, and she carried it around literally everywhere. Even though Annie did not have a job situated, she was receiving unemployment money from Sweden, which helped her pay for her rent and afford to survive. So during her first time in Scotland, in the summer, Annie attended a nightclub that she frequented, which was called Mood, which is an awesome name for a nightclub. It was there that she met Martin Leslie. Now, Martin is an internationally known rugby player who's from New Zealand, who had recently stopped playing. But when he was an active player, he played for Scotland. So not only did Annie love rugby, she also had a soft spot for rugby players, which is not surprising at all to me. So Annie enjoyed going out to nightclubs, but she was a very cautious drinker. She did not like being drunk, and sometimes she would only drink soda when she went out. Like, she was an outgoing girl who insisted that she didn't need alcohol to have a good time, which I just want a round of snaps for Annie.
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome. As somebody with social anxiety, that is an amazing trait to have. Anyways, the night that she met Martin, he was really insistent about her drinking champagne, but Annie was headstrong and she didn't let him pressure her into drinking when she didn't want to. So they ended up talking all night and they hit it off, and he had talked to her, you know, about his life, like about his injury and about his brother who also played rugby, and it's not completely clear if they spent any time together before she left for Sweden that August. In late November, when Annie was back for the second time in Scotland, Martin showed up at the pool that Annie had a pass to. She thought it was kind of weird, and she was like, okay, maybe I should, you know, avoid him, but okay, whatever. Well, less than a week later, he showed up at the rugby club that she attended. Now, that might not seem weird to you because, you know, he's involved in rugby, but let me tell you why she thought it was weird. Because she's into rugby players, and she's into rugby. And so Martin is her type, and she was a regular at the rugby club and at the pool, but she had never noticed Martin. So it seemed kind of off to her. She's like, I feel like if he had been here before and if he was a regular here, like, I would know who he is. So, like, why is he showing up now twice in a week in my life? So she felt kind of threatened as a woman. She's like, you know, I feel like it might not be 100% safe around this guy, so I'm going to avoid him. And she actually called him a sexual predator to her best friend, Maria. Now, Maria Jansen, her best friend, recalls of this encounter, quote, she thought he was there with the New Zealand rugby team during the big rugby games. She also thought that Martin Lindsay had been too persistent with trying to make her drink alcohol on several occasions. She, however, declined his offer and thought that could be one of the reasons to his strange and aggressive behavior. So, just after that, Annie's behavior began to change a little bit. Over the phone, she told her family that she was concerned that she was being followed or watched. She began calling from phone booths in case her phone activity was being, like, tapped into, and her family was getting kind of concerned. A staff member at the apartments that she stayed at alleged that Annie told her she, quote, had something to take care of, and, quote, had made a decision that might change her life. But that wasn't it. Annie told another person that she was depressed about a relationship with a man, But at the time, she didn't elaborate on any details, and Maria didn't know about this incident. So on December 2nd, Annie's mother, Guya, decided to confront her about it. When she called, Annie was with a friend in Scotland, Kat, and Annie's mom told her, like, the family's worried, and Annie said, quote, "You have to respect this, but I have to take care of myself." So she spoke to a friend later that night about attending a party, but she never ever, or excuse me, nobody ever came forward with any details of this party or to say that she was even seen later on that evening. Annie did decide a week prior to this, though, that she was going to visit home to spend time with her friends and family. While she was there, she was going to go Christmas shopping with Maria, and she intended to return two library books that she had previously borrowed, and she scheduled an appointment with her hairdresser. Before leaving, she ensured that she paid her rent so she would be set for her return. The weird thing is, Annie didn't book a flight home, so I guess she was just planning on going to the airport and seeing what they had available for standby. So on Saturday, December 3rd, 2005, Annie is seen in the early morning leaving her apartment complex by somebody who lived there. At 2:15 p.m., Annie was at an ATM in Glasgow Central Station. She attempted to withdraw 100 pounds. It was declined, so she attempted to withdraw 50 pounds, but that was also declined. At 3:15 p.m., Annie was seen on CCTV footage at the walkway that connected Prestwick Airport to the train station that connected to it. Her hair was in a ponytail, and she was dressed in pants, a red shirt, a red and white fleece, and a dark green winter coat. She had a bag on her shoulder. She was seen next, 55 seconds later, exiting to the parking area. To do this, she would have had to take an escalator and walked part of the concourse to exit the building. This exact walk was replicated multiple times, and it is not possible for someone to move that quickly without physically running. So I want you to keep that in mind. At 3:19 p.m., Annie comes back into the airport with a look on her face that Maria marks as either angry or annoyed. So she was next seen on the walkway again, exiting the airport the same way that she came. So the total time, according to this CCTV footage, that Annie was in the airport was 4 minutes and 41 seconds. So she didn't at any point approach a desk or attempt to get a ticket, which is really weird. So we can speculate all day about why Annie went into the parking lot area. She was unsuccessful to withdraw money at the train station, so it's possible she wanted to try again, but there's no way of knowing because there are no ATMs in the parking area, so therefore there's no record of another withdrawal attempt. And also, there was no CCTV footage in the parking area. Though that logically makes some sense, ATMs tell you when you have insufficient funds, and I don't know why she would try again. Like, she obviously knew she didn't have it. So some have speculated maybe she was looking or waiting for someone to show up. Since she had only been outside for 3 minutes, though, that kind of seems unlikely to me. Because why would you only wait for 3 minutes for somebody to be there?
Right, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Unless the CCTV footage timing is incorrect. Which it could be, considering her walking times are completely improbable. The only issue I have with that is that could be tested. Like, they could easily test that and see if the times are correct or not, but they didn't. Some people have suggested that the footage had been altered or parts had been removed. There isn't footage of Annie going from the walkway to the parking area, so we also can't say for sure that she didn't run, but the odds of her having stopped running right before the camera hit her twice is, I mean, just so unlikely. So at 4:05 p.m., Station Road in the town of Prestwick had CCTV footage of a person walking with a backpack. Police speculated that this is Annie. However, many people disagree, insisting that the image is actually a man. It is a completely garbage image of somebody. But this figure being Annie kind of goes along with the police narrative of this case, so that'll all make sense in just a little bit. I do want to say about this, though, that there is nothing definitive about this footage to say that it's Annie. Period. So if Annie had never been to Prestwick, which, we are now assuming that she walked from the airport to the town, which she might have, But the main issue with that theory is the route that she would have taken also has CCTV footage, and she was not captured on that. So they're trying to say that she went from the airport, knew where she was going, ended up in the town, but wasn't captured on the CCTV footage going into the town. At 4:30 p.m., two men at the beach in Prestwick saw someone in the distance standing motionless at the edge of the water. When they eventually turned around to head back to where they came from, they saw the same person in that spot. Now, these men could not tell if the person was a man or a woman. And keep in mind that this is December, so people are bundled up because it's fucking cold in Scotland. Another report came in about someone who was possibly Annie talking to two men on the beach between 4:30 and 5 p.m. But again, we cannot ascertain that this was for sure Annie. It was merely a tip that was reported. Only one of the two people who had allegedly maybe seen her were interviewed by police, and they blatantly told police that they could not even say that the person was for sure a female. So therefore, that's like a completely unreliable, uncredible sighting, right?
Right, exactly. Like, what was the point in even mentioning it?
Exactly. But it's going to come into play, unfortunately. On 8:30 a.m. the next morning, December 4th, 2005, a dog walker came across a body face down on Prestwick Beach. The body belonged to 30-year-old Annie Boryason. Though she was clothed, she was only in her pants and the red t-shirt that she had been wearing. Her green jacket and her book bag were very close to her body. Inside of her backpack was her passport, her wallet, which had 300 pounds in it, and the two library books that she was going to be returning in Sweden. So, I just want to point out, she had money in her bag. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of weird that they had known that she was trying to go to ATMs. Because, like, why are you trying to use ATMs if you have 300 pounds on your person?
Right, exactly. That doesn't make any sense. And then you said she went to the ATM multiple times, right?
Well, we know that she tried to withdraw twice from the same ATM.
Yeah.
We don't know if she was looking for an ATM when she went into the parking area of the airport. That's just one of the thoughts that police had might be true. But then why would she be insistent on finding an ATM if she had money in her wallet already?
Right, exactly. That is weird.
Right.
And then the fact that she's dead, but the money is still in her backpack.
Right. So clearly, nobody was trying to steal anything from her. We can definitely, well, at least not any money from her. So, many articles that I read noted that the tides in Scotland are pretty strange. So, for several hundred meters from the shore, the water's only about 1 meter at its highest point, which is about 3 feet tall. So, and I know that you can drown in any amount of water. I know you can drown in an inch of water, but I just want you to keep that in mind. It's only about 3 feet tall. It's also important to note that the ground here in the water is incredibly flat. So, like, you know how when you walk out into the water on the beach and for a while, and, like, you're just, like, a little bit sinking into the sand, but there's not a drop for a while?
Yeah.
That's exactly, like, how this was. So, it's shallow for a long time. So, the most curious part, in my opinion, is that Annie and her belongings were scattered about the same distance on the shore. Now, this might not strike somebody as odd, but let me explain. If I were to place a basketball in the water, and myself in the water, and just waited for the tide to push us in, which do you think would come onto the beach first?
The basketball.
I'm sorry, I always ask you these questions without giving you kind of any frame of reference. But you're correct, the basketball. And also, the basketball would probably go further, because it weighs significantly less than I do. So, the density of these items, Annie's body, her backpack, and her jacket, are incredibly different. So, it's very peculiar that they would all be essentially together. And that's without factoring in currents, because we're assuming that no current pulled any object one way or another. So, if Annie went into the water nearby where she was seen and then later found, that means that she couldn't have been out past the wall where the water is deep. Because even the slightest current would have pulled, at the very least, Annie's jacket to a different spot.
Right, definitely.
So, that being said, Experts offered to study the tidal patterns from that day to make more sense of this, but police denied that offer. So in that spot, there's also a slight incline. So where the tide hits the seawall, like, it's not likely to have pushed a body there. Does that make sense, kind of the way that I'm putting that?
So, it's kind of, like, higher up. So, no, not to me. Sorry.
Okay. So, where the seawall is that part where it kind of, where the, like, it starts to drop. Okay, so, that makes kind of a wall, right?
Yes, okay.
So, a body being pushed over that is not likely.
No. Okay, now. Okay, sorry.
Sorry. I just had to rephrase. No.
That doesn't make any sense. Like, you'd think it would just push against it, but not push anything over it. Well, like, a body over it.
It would just push a different direction. Because if water, I mean, just in general, you know how, like, if you have a little sandcastle and you build a wall, mm-hmm. you build a fort, what does the water do when it hits the wall? It splashes and it goes a different direction.
Yes, you are absolutely correct.
So, like, for it to force itself over a wall, and I understand that she's heavy enough that she physically could go over it, but the odds of the heavier object going over that wall versus something lighter, you know, so, like, her jacket having gone that way makes perfect sense, because it's already on a high level. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later, too, about where she should have been in the water. But that doesn't make sense, and that right there is enough for me personally to believe that Annie was probably placed on the beach after her death. But I'm going to give you 1,000 more reasons to think that. You're allowed to disagree with me.
Okay.
But I don't think you will. So Annie's hands were covered in bags. Normally when police gather a body, they put your entire body in a bag. They didn't do that. Just her hands.
But what?
There's no explanation for that. So we're just gonna, okay. I'm just gonna leave that as is. Her hands were covered, nothing else was. She was removed from the scene, and it was cordoned off by police, but no forensic evidence was collected from the scene. Zero. Like, no attempts were made to recover her red fleece that she was seen wearing in the CCTV footage, but was not on her person.
So it's like they like, really, like, half-assed did this. Like, not even half-assed, just didn't, it's like, they just didn't want to deal with it. So they just fucked everything up and did everything, like, very minimal, if anything.
If you think that now, you're going to be angry in about 10 minutes. Because this is the very basis of them fucking things up. So they also didn't look for her file of facts, which, remember I said, had, like, her entire life in it. She carried it literally everywhere. It wasn't on her body. Her backpack was there. She was there. Her file of facts wasn't. So Annie was brought to the hospital to await an autopsy. And at 11:30 p.m. that day, and I remember this happened early in the morning that she was found, Annie's family was informed of her death. The very next day, Annie's family received an even worse call. Police told them that Annie had completed suicide.
What the fuck?
Then they had a news release stating that Annie, whom they incorrectly called 31 years old, by the way, died under no suspicious circumstances. At this point in time, the autopsy had not been done.
They barely did their jobs. Okay, that's the first part that bothers me. And then they're going to go ahead and just assume and make these blanket statements that she committed suicide with no, like, proper evidence being taken into consideration. Like, that's crazy.
That's exactly correct. They had already made up their minds what had happened. So keep that in mind for every single thing that I'm about to tell you. So they used the potential sightings of Annie on the beach as conclusive evidence and said, quote, "A witness statement indicated that someone fitting Annie's description was seen standing at the water's edge looking out to sea at about 4:30 p.m. So not only is this untrue, that witness couldn't even tell you if it was a male or a female standing out there.
Exactly.
But it also just suited their narrative. And again, this is before the autopsy happened. So they took unconfirmed information to paint a picture of what happened. They know that Annie ended up at the beach. They have no idea how she got there. But they went ahead and said she walked from the airport to the beach, she was seen, and then she completed suicide by drowning. So, the autopsy aligned with this police conclusion that Annie drowned by suicide. In it, there were noted small bruises on the temple and scratches on her arm, all caused by objects in the water. Her toxicology came back negative for drugs, and she had a very minute amount of alcohol in her system. After the autopsy, Annie was driven to London by Global Network's funeral assistants so that her body could be flown to Sweden for burial. So the director for this company was astonished by what he saw, because Annie's hair was falling out in chunks and there was a ton of it missing at the bottom. There was also deep bruising on her body. The bruising was larger than a palm on the side of her body, her head, and then there was a bruise behind her right ear. There were also thumb impressions bruised around her neck. Not a single one of these were reported in her autopsy.
So there were literal thumb impressions on her neck, and they didn't try to do anything with that?
They did.
Like, with anything?
They did not even record it. So her body hadn't been stored properly either after the autopsy, so she was decomposing very quickly. Like, you're supposed to store human remains in a cold place to slow down decomposition. They did not do that. So the director of this company was like, what the actual fuck? So he wrote a note to Annie's insurance, and he notified the Scottish police, but nobody wanted to follow up with him. So,
like, this is, they just, like, fucked this whole investigation from, like, the beginning. And for what? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, there was no investigation here.
They fucked the whole crime scene up and everything. They did everything ass backwards. It's like they decided, oh, I don't feel like doing my job today, so I'm not gonna sit there and take anything. I'm not gonna do anything correct. And then, this is crazy. This is why people don't trust cops. Like, this is exactly why.
You see, and I can get with that. I can be like, okay, the police are being lazy, but why on earth would a coroner do that?
That is true. I mean, I guess maybe because they work closely with the cops.
But yeah, like, because coroners are the people who work with the police. Because there's, you know, and so they're fitting the narrative with them, which is why they didn't know any of these giant bruises.
That's so fucking crazy.
When Annie's body arrived in Sweden at the undertaker's, the person there immediately knew something was wrong. She also noted the deep bruising, her hair, and the lack of any of this information on the autopsy. She stated that someone's hair doesn't just fall out like that because they've drowned or because they have died. And I don't mean like her hair was falling out from the top. I mean there were hacked off chunks between 5 and 15 centimeters from the bottom of her hair for a total of about 70 centimeters, which is about 27 inches, that was missing from the bottom of her
hair. So it's like somebody just grabbed random pieces and just started cutting?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly what it looked like to them. So police insisted that the bruising was there from exposure and decomposition. But that's the thing. Bruising is from blunt trauma, and it occurs when you're alive. Your body doesn't bruise the same way when you're deceased. And you can argue that maybe she hit some rocks in the sea, but I do want to remind you that this is a sand beach, so there are no large rocks, and also rocks don't have thumbs. So...
Are you sure? No,
I but am seriously. Sure. Like, so... I suppose it's possible that she entered the water in an area with large rocks, and there's no certainty about where she entered the water, and I'll come back to this in a little bit, but just as a reminder, all her backpack and her jacket ended up in the same spot, so if they entered at a place that had big enough rocks, it had to be far enough away to where these rocks would have been. So the odds of them all coming together and ending up in this spot is even less likely in that scenario. Now, Guya, her mother, is obviously distressed about everything going on. She doesn't at all believe that Annie completed suicide. Because why would she travel 80 miles from Edinburgh to Prestwick to do that? A lot of times, and of course, I can't make blanket statements about suicide, but a lot of times people like to go to a place that has significance to them. Annie had never been to Prestwick. That's true. This was her first time ever being there. Why would she have packed her bag with her passport, with library books to return in Sweden, and made plans for her trip, including paying her rent ahead of time and scheduling an appointment with her hairdresser? Now, it's true that you never have any idea what's going on with someone, and that it's very possible that someone can make plans and then have a breakdown just hours later. I'm not discrediting that.
It's fine. We already know that Annie wasn't in the best place mentally and that she was paranoid and potentially afraid of something or someone. So Guya decided that since she had Annie's passwords, she would try and log into her accounts and see if there was like anything telling in there, like any emails or any weird messages. But there was literally nothing. There were zero emails in her account and zero phone calls on her record. Everything had been wiped completely clean. And it's possible that this is because Annie was worried that someone was tracking her, but it's also possible that that was something more sinister. Like, I can see that both ways.
I can, too. It's almost like it's kind of convenient that everything was deleted. I feel like just the way everything is gone as far as, like, this so-called investigation, which really wasn't an investigation at all, like, it's all just really weird. And all of her stuff being, like,
completely wiped.
But, I mean, like you said, she was really paranoid, so maybe she did that. I just feel like, even if you were paranoid, I mean, I don't know. I would feel like you would want to leave something. That way it would kind of give, like, your loved ones clues, or anybody clues, like, into, like, what you were feeling before anything happened to you,
basically. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, but I'm not sure if I feel that way because, like, I'm into true crime and, like, that makes sense to me, or if that's something that, like, everybody feels like that way. But one of the things that I think is interesting about that is it's not like she just deleted emails from, you know, potentially somebody that could have been involved in why she's paranoid. Like, she deleted deleted the phone call record between her and her mom. Like, why would that need to be hidden? Or, like, does she not want these people to be able to know how to contact her family and her friends? Like, there's so many questions that come out of that, even if she's the one who did it. It's like, well, why are you worried about your friends and family being tracked on there, too? So, lots of questions. None of it's going to have an answer, I'm sorry. But it's just one of those weird pieces to this puzzle. But at the end of the day, it really didn't matter what anyone thought, because like you just said, the Scottish police weren't going to open up the case for a homicide investigation. So years later, Annie's family found out that DNA from an unknown woman was on her hands, and it had never been tested. So years later, they looked for a match, and there wasn't one. Now, this could be from literally anything. Like, you can get DNA on your hands from hugging somebody or from touching the same, like, door handle a couple seconds later. I just want to make a point that, like, Annie wasn't in the water long enough for this DNA to come off of her hands. So, just something to keep in mind here. The warmer the water, the quicker the DNA gets removed from your body. So, this is December in Scotland. Water's cold. So, for warm water, DNA typically, like topical DNA, I mean like on your skin, is usually gone within about 4 hours. There is no concrete data for how long it lasts in cold water. And again, I'm talking about skin, not your clothes, not your belongings. There's no data on cold water, though, so we know that it can last longer than 4 hours. But again, if we're saying, you know, the last time that she was seen was 5 o'clock in the evening, and then she wasn't seen until she was washed up on the beach until 8 o'clock in the morning, like, we don't know what time frame still she would have been in the water. So the family's like, okay, look, we're getting a second autopsy. So the doctor who conducted the second autopsy inquired for, like, to get the autopsy photos from the very first autopsy.
I don't like that.
And the family also was not given the photos, even though they asked. So the doctor noted that there were no significant findings on the original autopsy, but that there was a very clear frothy fluid in Annie's mouth. We kind of discussed this in Debbie Wolf's case, which is the case that really led to this whole season, what this whole season's going to be. And I don't expect you to remember that, so I'm going to kind of go through a couple of different things here, but I'll touch back on that specific point in a minute. So things get kind of weirder after that. Annie's family had an independent diatom specialist take a look at bone marrow obtained during the autopsy. So when you drown, the water that you swallow will have diatoms, which is like little microalgae, and it'll go through your lungs and into your bloodstream. So the only kind present in her blood were diatoms that come from fresh water, not salt water. So let's talk about that. There's two nearby freshwater ponds that technically do feed into the sea, so she could have been technically dragged through, if she went into a freshwater body, dragged through the seawater, but had drowned in the freshwater, which would be why that was in her bloodstream. But first of all, it's incredibly improbable, just based on the tide and the distance that she would have had to travel in such a short period of time. But additionally, if she ended up in the spot where she was allegedly seen, you know, nearby, she simply couldn't have entered the water there then and floated to freshwater alive, drowned there, and then ended up back where she started. So you're saying she went all the way around, drowned somewhere in a freshwater lake, which who knows how she would even know how to get there, but okay. And then you're saying that her and her belongings came from the freshwater to this spot. It near the sea and the salt water. So it's completely bogus. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And just to top it off, the diatom specialist also notes that the diatoms that were found can also be found in drinking water. And so therefore they could have been from some time before her death. So the importance of all this is there's no evidence on her body physically and in her bloodstream that she drowned in salt water.
Yeah, no, the whole thing. it's all very, very, very improbable. See, what I was thinking while you were describing it was I was thinking, well, you know, even if she did, you know, die in the freshwater area and then she went to the salt water, wouldn't that kind of be mixed in there?
Not necessarily, because what would have filled her lungs and went into her bloodstream would have been what actually drowned her.
Gotcha. But then the fact of the matter of it, like, potentially being regular drinking water versus just fresh water, like, it just doesn't, it's just a lot of probability, but not a lot of, like, concrete evidence of what might have happened to her, or, like, any... Like, I feel like, how can I describe it? It's just a lot of, like, what ifs.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, more than likely, this is what happened.
Exactly. There's nothing concrete saying that she drowned in salt water. And I'm just going to elaborate this on this further, because I truly don't believe that she drowned in salt water. So it's important to note that because fresh water is hypotonic to plasma, blood volume increases quicker and therefore will cause drowning to occur quicker than in salt water. So the lungs become almost twice their normal weight and will cause changes in blood, such as like thinning or stain your vessels. Well, salt water, on the other hand, is hypertonic to plasma and therefore it can cause pulmonary edema and increases blood viscosity. So you could kind of expect to see water build up between the lung cavity and the chest. So my question is, was any of this looked at? Because I can't get access to the original autopsy report, but I can very confidently assume that this was not looked at because nobody during the original autopsy gave a shit about where Annie actually drowned. But this would be a super easy thing to analyze what kind of water that she drowned in. They are completely different features in your body physically when you drown in salt water versus fresh water. But I want to talk even more about drowning deaths. So you know how the original autopsy said the scratches were likely from being in the water?
Yes.
That could be true, but that doesn't make sense of the bruising. So I know I mentioned this before, you know, in terms of bruising, people will argue that, you know, perhaps she was experiencing livor mortis. So livor mortis tells you about body position before death. So blood will pool in areas that are dark in color. It looks kind of like a bruise, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with this is the location in which she had blood is not indicative of any kind of body position. So she would literally have patches of blood pooling from head to toe, like if she was experiencing livor mortis during drowning.
Huh.
But instead, she has distinct areas like her neck that have bruising. Again, just further proof that it's bruising, not from livor mortis. Like, you know, they're trying to argue, oh, that's from drowning. No, it's not. It's just not. Like, so in water deaths, it's common for someone to have livor mortis if it's present, because it's not always, but it'll appear on your legs, your feet, your forearms, your anterior chest, your heads, and your face. Additionally, livor mortis for water deaths typically have more of a pink hue than, like, a dark blue color. Well, she had dark blue bruises, like dark bluish purple. So also, livor mortis that occurs in water is not consistent with what her body looked like. So there's no reason to argue that.
So it's like, so from so far, where I'm thinking is she was obviously murdered, and then her body, like, murdered, I don't know where, but she was murdered, and then her body was just thrown in the water. That's what I'm picking up right now.
See, it's possible. It's very possible. And it's possible also that she was drowned and then thrown in the water. I'm not saying that it's not possible that she didn't drown, because she did have froth in her mouth, which does mean, which is an indication of drowning. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying it's very likely that she did drown. I just don't think she did it on purpose. I don't think she did it. Because it's not consistent with all of their findings. Because it doesn't make sense. The way that she died is not consistent with her having died from suicidal drowning. It's consistent with her being beaten and drowned, in my opinion, in a freshwater situation. So that could be in a bathtub. It could be in a lake. It could be anywhere. But not the ocean. That is not what it means. And it just, I mean, just looking at this, I mean, I wish I could view the actual autopsy report, but there's blatant statements online that there's no indication of what kind of water that she drowned in, but they're assuming that she drowned in this water, even though they were able to find only freshwater diatoms in her blood. This could have been really easy with an investigation to take a look at her chest cavity and look at her lungs.
It would have been real easy for them to do their fucking job. That's what it would have been.
That's correct.
To at least attempt to give a fuck about this poor girl who was found murdered.
Right.
Because at this point, that's what she was. But they decided that they didn't want to give a fuck about her. And therefore, here we are covering it on the podcast. Because it's ridiculous that they're thinking that she committed suicide or whatever. Like, no, the girl was murdered.
I would be shocked if the situation actually was that she completed suicide. People are going to argue that it's possible. And I can understand from her mental state how people could think that. But scientifically, I don't buy it. And there's another aspect of this, too, that we haven't even talked about yet. So we're talking about her body floating from some area and coming up to the shore, right?
Yes.
Body sink. So, once your lungs are filled with water and not air, you sink. Period.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. When you start to decompose, gases build up, which allow the body to float. Like, that's why people, you know, dump bodies in water with, like, bricks or weights. It's so that even when those gases, you know, start to build up, they're held down. So, that's where it's important to remember that cold preserves bodies and slows decomposition. So, they're also saying that Annie had to be decomposed enough to move through the current in the water and wash up on shore. Again, not impossible, but something worth questioning. And it changes the trajectory of where she could have entered the water, because there's no way that she entered in one of those freshwater ponds and ended up in the sea. That's not terribly close. She would have had to travel a decent distance to be able to get through that water. And you're telling me that after her body would have sank. Because she hasn't decomposed enough for her to have gases build up and start floating. It doesn't happen in that quick of a period of time, especially in cold water. But even in warm water, it would take a couple days.
Yeah, no, that to me is not possible.
No, it doesn't make sense. And this is why I love science.
Right, this is very far-reaching. Because, yeah, no, no.
Yeah, and so, I can understand why from, standpoints not looking at physical drowning deaths, how somebody could think that she potentially, wanted to complete suicide or that was the route that had happened. And if all these circumstances weren't true about the water and about where she ended up and her bags being near her and her having, freshwater diatoms in her blood only, no seawater diatoms, you could convince me. But all that being said, I don't buy it. I don't buy it, and nobody did the work, and that's the problem. So now we have to talk about this. Why? Like, why would somebody murder Annie? Are we talking about, is this just a random attack? Because to me, it kind of seems like police are covering something up.
Right. Like, it just doesn't make any sense why they wouldn't want to do their job when investigating this woman's murder.
Right.
Like, that's the part I just can't get over.
And on the surface, Annie's just an ordinary Swedish woman. And I don't mean like she's just like, oh, whatever. I just mean, she's just a normal person. Like, there's no reason, right, that police have any reason to cover something up.
Right.
But I have to tell you about something that happened shortly after her death. So Maria, her best friend, started receiving phone calls shortly after Annie died. But when she answered, it was always silent. So it was pretty unsettling, to say the least. But that feeling escalated when Maria made a startling discovery. Annie had an eerie similarity to someone who could potentially be being watched by people of power. And her name is Christina Borgeson. Now Annie, if you remember, her middle name is Christina. She's Annie Christina Borgeson. Well, Christina Borgeson was a journalist in the U.S. who was rumored to be investigating rendition flights. So let's talk a little about, just a little bit about rendition. So the war on terror was at its peak in 2005, where the story takes place. And I'm not going to get into this much, except for to say, for anybody who doesn't know, that it's a covert operation that involved people like the CIA that the US and the UK have denied exists. What they essentially did was move captured terrorists from one location to another. Allegedly, quote, this allowed the security forces to circumvent their own nation's laws on torture. The British government under Tony Blair allowed these flights to refuel and resupply at Prestwick, often carrying illegally detained prisoners. So, if Christina Borgeson was investigating this, it's very possible that she could have a target on her back. Now, This might seem far-fetched to some people, and there's no telling whether or not any of this is, has any real weight to this theory. When Guya was eventually able to obtain some documents regarding Annie's death, they were highly redacted. And she was told that the case is classified, and every redacted part will be kept that way to protect national interests. Which, why? You're saying that she, completed suicide, and that's it. Why is this a classified case? Right. Why can her family not have these documents? How does that protect national interests? That doesn't even make sense.
Exactly. I hate it, but I'd love how this has now turned into a conspiracy theory about things like that.
I should have known you would love that. And
I know.
Well, it gets worse with the conspiracy theory, so you're gonna love this. most damning, there is a very specific paper that Guya has that regards Annie's death. And it's heavily redacted, but it is dated. And the date is August 17th of 2005, which is months before Annie died. And at first it might seem like a totally careless mistake, but the curious part about that is August 17th, 2005 is the date that Annie flew from Scotland to Sweden when she was done with her scholarship. That's a very, very serious coincidence, in my opinion. Because it almost sounds like maybe she was being tracked.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I like this theory. I think this is a really good one to go off of.
Well, I have another one for you. Remember Martin Lindsay, the rugby player? Yes. He's internationally known, right?
Yes.
Well, he wasn't in Scotland at any point while Annie was there. So the man that she met was not Martin Lindsay.
Oh, shit.
It's unclear if Annie was aware of this false identity at the end, but she hadn't told her friends of any other identity for him. We do know that she was creeped out by him, and police were never able to locate him, and nobody can confirm if they even tried to. But so we have no idea who Martin Lindsay actually is in this story.
Huh.
So, you know, there's a lot of questions with him. Like, is he part of this rendition operation? Is he just a predator or a murderer? Or does he have nothing to do with it and he was just some guy who was trying to, I mean, be a predator and pretend like he was this famous rugby player to try to get with whoever?
And I can see that happening, like, you know, but, like, at the same time, when it comes to something like this and then you realize that there's a girl that was murdered and it just so happens that this guy is pretending to be somebody famous, it's like, maybe look into that more.
Right.
Like,
and you
try to see if you could find any footage or anything like that about, like, CCTV or anything.
Right. He was at the pool and at the rugby club and there would have been people they could talk to and they didn't. But the weird thing about him, too, is that he became prevalent just about, you know, a week or so before her death, is that he came back into the picture. And, you know, she was paranoid. She felt like she was being watched. Like, I don't know, was she?
Possibly. Like, I feel like it's very possible. Really quick, like, I seen this video today on TikTok, out of all places. Y'all know it's my fave. Basically, it was this young girl, or she was a younger woman. She was maybe in her 20s, but she was literally walking, and she was, she started recording herself walking because there was a man who was following her. And, like, in my head, I could just imagine this, like, I guess the girl, she literally walked around her town for 40 minutes, never stopped, never looked back, but she had her phone on, facing her to where she could see him directly in her phone. And then, of course, like, it was pointed towards him. And she walked for 40 minutes just doing that until finally she went to, like, a skate park. And then she told, like, a bunch of skaters, like, hey, can I hang out with you? This guy's, so he's been following me for 40 minutes. I just need, like, to be around a group of people. Like, I can see something like that happening, where somebody legit is following her. Like, that guy, like, he was already lying about who he was. And then for him to be, he could be very well, like, be following her.
Right. And he might have nothing to do with it. I mean, we don't know.
Right.
But that's just the thing, is we don't know. Nobody was ever questioned about it.
It's just, this whole thing is fucked.
It is.
That's the bottom line. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I stand. I'm, like, torn between all the different possibilities.
Right. And then, you know, of course, there is the possibility that she did complete suicide. You know, Annie did show signs of depression right before her death. And she had an obvious change in mental state. You know, her family and friends found it very evident. And though it's not necessarily typical of people to make plans before completing suicide, it's not unheard of. You never know what's going to happen. And so I do want to take a moment to give out the suicide prevention hotline number here in the U.S. is 800-273-8255. But for any of our international listeners, there's also a 24/7 internet support chat available on suicidepreventionlifeline.org. I don't know what the numbers are per country. I'm sure everybody has one, though, but that is available online 24/7. Also, I mentioned in the beginning that Annie, you know, played in a band, Annie and the Wolves, with her siblings. I listened to some of the music, and it's actually quite enjoyable. So if anybody is interested in hearing any of the music, it's actually available on her family's website that they have running for her called annierockstar.com. So you can go there. They have information in English and in Swedish on there, and you can go ahead and listen to the music. There is a section for that. And there's a bunch of songs on there, and it's actually quite fun. So I do recommend doing that as well. But that is our story of Annie Borgeson. I would love to know what everybody thinks. I don't know what I believe. It's also possible that Annie just randomly met somebody else and all these other things are coincidence. I just believe that it was a homicide.
Yeah, I don't know what I believe either. I kind of feel like I said earlier, like I'm torn between all of them. But, like, the fact that there was a woman's DNA found on her, like, and it was still on her with her being in the water for all of that time, like, I feel like there was more to it. Like, maybe it was, like, this woman, like, made, because you hear about these couples or these people who, it's a man and a woman, the woman is there to make the other women feel comfortable. Meanwhile, the man's going to do all these different, like, atrocities to them. Like, mm-hmm. That's how they lure women in. And I feel like that would be something that would happen to, could have happened to her.
It's very possible.
I don't feel that it was a suicide. That's one thing I can stand behind as far as, like, how I feel. I don't feel like it was a suicide. I feel like it was, she was murdered. It was covered up. The cops had something to do with it because clearly they botched the whole investigation from the beginning and didn't want to do anything. And, yeah.
Yeah, the cops covering it up and the coroner, especially with the autopsy report, the initial autopsy report, really is what leads me to believe that the police are somehow involved in a cover-up for this. But I guess, you know, we might never know. And anyways, I just wanted to share this story because it's something I had never heard of. And I think it's absolute bullshit that this was ruled as a suicide with the snap of a finger because I don't believe it at all.
Right.
So if you guys want to see pictures from this episode, you can find them on our Instagram at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
You can find our updates on Facebook at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
You can follow us on Twitter at
Crafts and Crime.
You can send us an email with stories or your opinions on this case. We would love to know what you think. You can do that at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime at gmail.com.
And most importantly, please keep listening. We appreciate it. And if you would like to get bonus episodes every month, you can join our Patreon at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
And that's it till next time. Bye!
Bye!